You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to a new week here at Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast discussion of Houston Rockets basketball. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent for Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship. As we chat this Sunday, as promised in our most recent episode, we're going to have a bit more discussion and breakdown on the newest official Rockets, those being USC guard DeAnthony Melton and Purdue forward Vince Edwards, each drafted in round two of Thursday's NBA draft. Melton was taken at 46 overall, that's the pick we knew the Rockets had going into the draft, and Vince Edwards selected at 52 overall with a pick the Rockets bought from the Utah Jazz. Kudos, by the way, to Rockets owner Tillman Fertitta for showing the willingness to spend some of his cash allotment to acquire that pick without trading any future assets. For those worried about Fertitta's willingness to potentially pay the luxury tax, all the bills it may take to keep this group together and or add to it, I think showing a willingness to buy a pick, that's a good first step in terms of a willingness to spend from the new Rockets owner. But in addition to Melton and Edwards, we're also going to be breaking down Houston guard Rob Gray, Duke guard Trevon Duval, and Cincinnati forward Gary Clark. Those are all the undrafted rookies who, to this point, we have heard through media reports have agreed to summer league deals with the Rockets, along with potential training camp invites for the fall. Now, as mentioned the other day, while I'm aware of the players and the deals, I'm far from a scouting expert. My focus over the past year has been on players who are already with the Rockets, as opposed to the litany of potential draftees that are playing college basketball. I've certainly watched film, and I've read scouting reports since Thursday on all five of these guys, but I'm clearly not an expert. Fortunately for us, one guy who is an expert is joining us on the program today to shed a little more light on all of the newest Rockets. We've had him on the program before, but his name is Patrick Oxford, and you probably know him on Twitter as HoopsMetrox. He's an NBA research analyst, a contributor for the basketball analytics blog, The Nylon Calculus, and he also hosts his own podcast called The Stat Nerd Draft Report. And again, he's always a great follow on Twitter for all things basketball, both Rockets and well beyond, at HoopsMetrox. That's HoopsMetrox. So without any further ado, let's go out to the phone lines where Patrick is waiting. Patrick, how's it going, my friend?
It's a great Sunday morning. How about you?
Can't complain at all. Happy that it's a new week, and well, we have a lot of gifts as NBA fans to kind of get unwrapped with free agency starting this coming weekend. Can't wait for what's to come in the days ahead. But before we look forward, I do want to look back and let off making clear that this podcast is about the newest official Rockets, those being the guys they brought in the draft. USC guard DeAnthony Melton, Purdue forward Vince Edwards, and then, of course, the three undrafted guys that we've learned they've had free agent deals with the past few days, Cincinnati forward Gary Clark, and guards Rob Gray and Trevon Duval out of Houston and Duke, respectively. Over the next few minutes, we're going to talk about all of these guys, but I want to lead with DeAnthony Melton out of USC, the 6'3" guard, because he's someone that a lot of people did not expect to even be on the board for the Rockets at 46. When I mentioned candidates for the Rockets at that spot, I expected them to look guard because they don't exactly have a young pipeline of guards the same way they do with the bigs, the Isaiah Hartenstein, Chinadu Onuwaku, Chochi. I never even mentioned Melton because I didn't think he would be on the board. I'm curious, is that the way you saw it? Were you kind of surprised that he was still there at 46? What was your assessment of that pick?
Yeah, I was extremely surprised that he was still on the board. I have him, I believe in 21 on my big board, and just to see him drop would make me imagine that he didn't shoot well in individual workouts. Teams value those pretty highly. I don't value them as highly. I think when you get with full regular season is much more telling. But if since we didn't get a full regular season from Melton, he had the whole missed season with USC because the FBI investigations and all of that. I can see how poor shooting workouts could scare off teams. He had videos, they're obviously highly doctored. They have hours to get 30 seconds of video footage in a gym. So, it's not hard to get that footage of him making 8 straight threes or whatever it is. I would imagine that he just didn't impress teams with his shooting to the point that they felt comfortable taking a risk on.
What I saw from 538 was that he was one of the bigger boom or bust prospects of the draft. They had him at a 24% bust rate, but a 10% chance of actually being an all-star. And I think it probably comes down to the shooting, because you know what he brings you defensively. There's going to be a high level there. And to some extent, you know, I guess it's a little reminiscent of Nick Johnson, Briante Weber, some of the defense first guards the Rockets have had in recent years who haven't fully panned out because their offense never picked up. But the upside, we heard some folks throwing out a Pat Beverly comp. I even heard Jay Billis mention Avery Bradley on the draft broadcast. Where do you kind of fall between those two? I know some folks said that they're optimistic on his shooting struggles because they say that he's kind of reworked his shot and his form looks good. Just curious if you agree with kind of the whole boom or bust pick and what you see his upside as.
Yeah, I think he's probably like almost the definition of a boom or bust because the shot is so pivotal to him succeeding in the league. I think if it comes down to him not being able to shoot, then it's going to be tough to see him getting quality minutes. You know, obviously the Rockets are eyeing postseason minutes, and when they're picking up players, you know, if you can get any minutes from a rookie in the postseason, that's huge. But I think the Rockets at this point need to be looking at, okay, the players we're adding to the rotation that are getting regular season minutes are going to need to be able to play playoff minutes. And with Melton, obviously, year one, him playing playoff minutes is a stretch, but, you know, you see year two, possibly. I think that would be when they kind of expect him to be able to post, you know, valuable minutes in those stretches. And it's just hard to see how the other facets of the game, like you said, don't pan out. So the shooting really is just, like, the key. And that's why I had him at 21 on my board and not, you know, and if I thought the shooting was, like, a sure thing, I did see the videos of his reworked form, I would have had him probably in the lottery. But I'm kind of a little hesitant to just jump on board with reworked shots that I haven't seen in-game. Kind of the same reason I didn't have Bamba just shoot up my board. He did move up a couple spots. But it's the same kind of line of thinking that I kind of want to see it in-game, because there's a lot of guys with really good-looking forms that still can't make them in the game. And there's a lot of guys with ugly forms that do make them. And so, well, obviously, you would prefer the form look good because it's repeatable and there's less margin for error, attempt to attempts. I don't think it's absolutely necessary, and I don't think that a good-looking form is just absolutely telling that they're going to be able to shoot.
Yeah. What do you think about his ability to play off the ball? Because certainly in Houston, James Harden, we presume Chris Paul will be back. One of the Pat Beverly comps I heard thrown out there from Jeremy Wu of Sports Illustrated was that he's not really a primary ball handler, but he's good enough to play off the ball. And when I hear that, it almost feels like Houston is an ideal fit for him if he's going to succeed. Because if he's not really enough of a ball handler to be a true point guard, but he doesn't really have the size to be a shooting guard, you almost, it feels like, need him to be in kind of a hybrid system like what's in Houston in terms of, you know, he can almost be the point guard on defense in terms of who he picks up. We heard Daryl Morey on Friday mention that he has an ability to stop dribble penetration, which was something they kind of struggled with in the playoffs, the likes of Derrick Rose, Jeff Teague, Alec Burks, Dante Exum. Yet, at the same time, offensively, while he has enough handles to, I guess, be viable in a pick-and-roll setting, it's not like in Houston you're asking him to literally be the point guard and facilitate the offense. So to me, it feels like a pretty good fit for him from what I've seen about his skill set. Is that something that you see as well?
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. Looking at his pick and roll scoring, obviously these stats are a year old, but he only scored 0.475 points per possession operating in the pick and roll, which is the 10th percentile, which is obviously terrible, and he turned it over on 32.8% of those possessions. So you'd obviously like to see, obviously, less of a burden on him in that role and maybe more of a spot-up. And then that obviously just more, I guess, heavily stresses the importance of his outside shooting, because he's going to have to be able to knock down that catch-and-shoot shot. Whenever he was playing with USC, he didn't show the ability to do that on a consistent basis. He was a... Mm-hmm. He shot, he kind of concerning to me, the 10th percentile on unguarded catch and shoots in the half court. So that's the one reason I think he would cross, the reason he did fall to us in the draft. I think at 46 is well worth the risk. I don't think there was any really risk with taking him at 46 because it's all just upside at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But for a team in the first round that has to guarantee years to him and higher dollar amounts, I see why there's some skepticism.
I want to move on to Vince Edwards, their second pick, which they bought at 52 overall. My assessment of Edwards is that it's more steady, less boom or bust. We heard from Morey that they didn't really think that Melton would even be in play in the mid-second round. They kind of had Edwards targeted as someone that they figured would be in that range, whereas Melton just sort of surprised them with his availability. So that's why they took Melton at 46 and looked to buy a pick, which they did at 52 from the Jazz. When I look at Edwards, I don't see anything that stands out as just a potential star. We mentioned the potential boom with Melton being the 10% shot as 538 estimated. He could actually be an all-star level player if that shot pans out. And we know the Rockets have a history of trying to work with guards with weak jumpers all the way back to Kyle Lowry. And sometimes, like Lowry, those guys do end up panning out. With Edwards, I don't know if there's necessarily the defensive impact or the creation ability on offense to be a star or anything resembling that. But for a guy who shot 40% or better three straight years, played at a high major program in Purdue for 4 years, the rare four-year college player, a good fit for the Rockets defensively in that Purdue, unlike a lot of college teams, they did switch everything. We heard Friday at the press conference that Edwards was pretty pumped about that, going to a system in Houston in which Mike D'Antoni and Jeff Bezdelic prioritized switching on everything. So with Edwards, I don't necessarily see the upside, but I see someone who even year one could potentially be a contributor for spot minutes if there are injuries, if certain scenarios where they need maintenance or rest come up. To me, Edwards, he may not have the upside of Melton, but he might be a hair more ready because you feel better about his jump shot. What did you, A, is that a fair assessment? And B, what did you think of his game going into the draft?
That's a totally fair assessment. Going into the draft, I have him number 32 on my board, so I thought he was a really good pickup on the Rockets. And as the draft was unfolding and they bought that second pick, I figured that Melton falling was a surprise to the Rockets as well, and Vince Edwards was probably their initial target. Although I did hear that there's another target, I think it went a little bit earlier, that they kind of were targeting, but it was kind of a less hopey fall, but we're not really counting on. So I think Vince Edwards was probably their initial target. And his ability to switch is probably the reason. Like you said, he's a guy I think that can step in and at least get us some minutes. Maybe those Gerald Green minutes were filled by Vince Edwards if we're not able to bring Gerald Green back. It's really easy to see a role where he can come in and just play right away. Looking at his defense, he ranks in the 76th percentile in isolation defense, which obviously is a huge part of switching defense, because once you get into the high leverage playoffs, isolation defense is almost what you're going to see, knowing it's a word. Like we just saw a lot of postseason, they're going to look for weak links, and I don't think Vince Edwards is a player they're going to be able to find as a weak link. So that makes him playable just if he can hit a three. And his track record shows he can hit three at a very high level. So, I mean, it's hard to not see why he would be able to contribute at some point. In the regular season and the postseason, I don't even think it's that big of a stretch. Looking at his shooting, he was excellent in both guarded and unguarded catch and shoot, 85th and 86th percentile, respectively. On runners, 98th percentile. Jump shots in the half court, total 84th percentile, which did include some mid-range. 12.8% of his jump shots were in the mid-range, so it's not like he even favors that, which means there's not much of an adjustment he needs to go on. He won't be taking the Rockets off us, obviously.
If you could kind of compare and contrast him to Gary Clark, because I could be wrong, but I think Clark, the undrafted forward out of Cincinnati, they struck a deal with. They're both, I think, 6'8", 225, classic tweeners, although in the Mike D'Antoni system, they would each play a somewhat similar role. It's not like the Rockets go with the five traditional spots. They're kind of an atypical team from that perspective, new age. But while I think Edwards and Clark they might each have similar body types. And so I guess in theory, they're probably competing for the same minutes. At the same time, they bring a very different approach in terms of Clark's a little more explosive. Edwards, you mentioned the steadiness in the shooting, the switching defense. He's a very high IQ player. Just curious, because those two guys, you know, look so similarly, at least in terms of the minutes they'd be competing for, how you kind of evaluate those guys relative to each other. Because I'm sure in summer league and then in training camp, if they get both get there, I think Edwards and Clark are both going to be probably vying for the same minutes.
Yeah, I think that Edwards will see more in the 3-4, and Clark is a 4, maybe even some small ball 5 in, if he was to pan out. I think that would be, like,
okay,
an ideal, like, if he pans out. But, I mean, when you're talking about undrafted free agent, we're talking about very slim chances that
right.
pan out. But I was actually pretty high on Clark. I thought he should have been drafted. He was number 44 on my big board. So, I was a pretty big fan of his game, and someone who can come in and create a defensive impact. His jump shooting, like Melton, is a question mark, but he had at least one season of decent volume and success. You always kind of hesitate to say that a player who finally, you know, clicks on the shooting senior season has figured it out. Because, I mean, at that point, they're just so much bigger, and it is a shorter line. You kind of want to maybe take a wait-and-see approach, and I think that's why he didn't get drafted. If he would have had two seasons of 40-plus percent three-point shooting, I think he's an easy second-round pick for someone, because he has really amazing defensive at six.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he had an eight stop percentage, you know, combining steal and block percentage, which is just, like, really ridiculous for a player who doesn't seem to be hunting them. Like, another player I was pretty high on the draft is Fonzie Colson. But you can just tell by watching the film, Colson hunts the steals and blocks while Clark just lets them come to him.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes him more valuable than someone like Colson.
So it sounds to me, you know, when you describe his game, a little bit like Montrezl Harrell, although more of a three-point stroke heading into the league, even after 3 years, they're still trying to develop Harrell with the Clippers out to three-point range. That's something, especially in Houston, you would always see them working on. Clark did shoot somewhat lower volume, I should say, last year, what, 1.7 three-point attempts per game, but again, made them at an above 43% clip. It almost seems like to me that Edwards has a higher floor, but Clark has a higher ceiling, and that with Clark, there's the risk in terms of, is the three-point shooting sustainable? With Edwards, you know it is. But if, with Clark, the three-point shooting, the 43.5% at the college level, is sustainable, then because of the defensive instincts, because of the athletic explosion, he might have even higher upside. Is that reasonable? Is that kind of how you see those two guys?
Yeah, absolutely. I think defensively, Edwards is probably a little more versatile.
Okay.
Still not quick enough, I think, to guard some wings that are really quick. Like, if you're on another team and you put him on James Harden, you get roasted, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, he's not gonna be able to take on the Trevor Ariza duties. But Clark has the rim protection included with that, and I think that his defensive instincts are maybe a tad bit better. I mean, if we're splitting hairs here, because I think they're both smart players, but Clark just stands out a little bit more, and he really just anchored what was one of the best defenses in the nation this past season.
To wrap up, let's turn our attention to the two guards. Rob Gray out of Houston, got a feeling a lot of listeners know him well, and Trevon Duval out of Duke, who was highly regarded out of high school, but as I understand it, the big concern with Duval was the jump shot. So as you go into training camp, mentioned that Melton, of course, is going to have the upper hand because of his upside in terms of that fourth guard spot, which the Rockets have been trying to fill for quite some time behind Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, and James Harden. Melton, obviously, the front runner, but I think Rob Gray and Trevon Duval will certainly be vying for those minutes as well. If you could just kind of compare and contrast those players, I think Gray, people are familiar with, but probably more of an all-around game, whereas Duval seems like more of a flyer in terms of, you know the overall package, but I guess it's just, can he get that jump shot going?
Yeah, Duval is obviously the higher upside pick there. He's, how many years younger, like 4 years younger.
Yes.
Or something like that. And if you're looking for someone that can contribute maybe 4 years down the road, Duvall would probably be, I think, the way you lean. But if you're looking for someone who maybe could possibly step in for the occasional minute when Chris Paul has to sit, you know, let's say Chris Paul, if you want to give him a rest for a game, I think Rob Gray is someone whose play style is similar enough to what the Rockets already do that he can step in and give you 7-8 minutes if that's all you need. Like, if we have other players to fill in the rest of the gap, Gray is a player that I think could step in and give just the occasional minute here and there pretty soon. I don't know about the beginning of the season. Maybe you want to get him, you know, let him get his legs underneath him before you throw him into the fire. But he's someone I've been high on for a while now. I think that his three-point shot is better than he probably showed this past season. He took a lot of difficult attempts, and he just had easier attempts in our offense playing alongside the players that are currently on our roster. As far as Duvall goes, he's such an explosive athlete. He does have, I think, decent vision. Like, he's not like Trae Young type vision where like it's just generational, but he had a better vision, I think I would say, Colin Sexton. And so, I mean, if the three-point shot ever develops, there's some definite troubles with the form. There's a hitch in there that I really don't like at all. And the free throw percentage obviously doesn't really indicate that it's going to be much better going forward. But if that ever could pan out, or if you could find minutes, maybe where we have four other shooters on the floor and he didn't operate in the pick and roll a few years down the line, maybe he doesn't even need the shots and that's to give you occasional minutes, but he's never going to be a big player in the league unless he develops that shot. That's just a minimum at this point.
So it sounds a little bit to me like Duvall is more of a traditional floor general in terms of his approach, whereas Rob Gray, a little bit more of a combo guard. I know they're both, I think they're both 6'3", or actually Gray is just 6'2", but Gray seems to be more of a scoring approach, whereas Duvall, at this point, especially with his limited jumper, is more of just your prototype floor general in terms of what he can bring you. Is that reasonable?
Yeah, that's pretty reasonable. I'd say Duvall is, needs to improve around the basket as well. He's not able to put pressure on the defense. He's, like you only mentioned, the 26th percentile around the basket on non-post ups in half court. So he definitely has work to do as far as putting pressure on the defense, whereas Gray obviously has years of experience as the primary initiator who has had less than ideal weapons around him, whereas Duvall has just come from a situation where he had two of obviously the top, let's say, 6 or 7 big men in the country. And not a bad wing tandem around him either, with Grayson Allen and Gary Trent Jr. It'll be interesting to see how you know Gray is able to translate his primary scoring burden into a lesser role, while Duvall maybe has to pick up more of a burden than he had before.
Good stuff there from Patrick Oxford, NBA research analyst, contributor for the Nylon Calculus analytics blog, and he hosts his own podcast, the Stat Nerd Draft Report, at HoopsMetrox on Twitter, HoopsMetrox. Patrick, thank you so much for the time. Anything else you want to throw out as far as plugs, where people can find you beyond what I already kind of laid out?
Yeah, I just started up a Twitter page for the Stat Nerd Draft Report, like you were saying. The handle there is @SNDraftReport. And I'd appreciate a follow there, trying to get that base up. And I do a lot of draft videos. If you haven't checked out the videos I put out on the Anthony Melton and Gary Clark, you should do that. I posted them on Clutch Fans. I posted them on my Twitter account. And I'm hoping to get a Vince Edwards video up soon. Maybe I'll try to focus on how he can impact, or how he can make an impact in the Rockets offense, as opposed to more of a traditional sampling of his plays. We'll see how that turns out. If you have any input, go ahead and reach out at HoopsMetrox, like Finn laid out.
Sounds good. Patrick, thanks so much for the time, buddy, and we'll talk again soon, okay?
All right, sounds good. Have an excellent day.
Thank you. Good stuff there, as always, from Patrick Oxford. Again, you can find him on Twitter at HoopsMetrox, HoopsMetrox. And with that, I think we can put a bow on this draft episode of Locked on Rockets. Please stay tuned the remainder of the week, because while we may be done until Summer League, that begins July 6th, talking about the rookies for the Rockets, along with, of course, the young prospects that will also be playing, Joe Chi, Shinanu Anuaku, hopefully Isaiah Hartenstein, those types. For the next, I would say, week to 10 days, it's going to be all more established players, because as we chat this Sunday, we are now just a week away from free agency officially opening. That happens at 11 p.m. this Saturday night, June 30th, Houston time. Of course, that's because it's midnight on the East Coast, where the NBA league offices are. Midnight on July 1st is when deals can officially get done. And for the Rockets, we may have activity before that, because the big names that we know they're going after in free agency, the likes of LeBron James and Paul George, well, the reasonable way to get them to Houston, just like Chris Paul last year, is to opt in to the final year of their existing contract and to be traded. That's how you can strike a deal without hard capping yourself. And if the Rockets hard cap themselves, which is what it would take to assign and trade in free agency, then it would be very difficult to retain all the players that are free agents from this team the past year, that being Chris Paul, Clint Capella, Trevor Ariza, Luke Bamute, Gerald Green, etc. And clearly the Rockets, after winning 65 games this past season and pushing the Warriors to the brink before CP3's ill-timed hamstring injury, that's something they have interest in. So if the Rockets are going to strike a big deal for the likes of LeBron James, Paul George, or anyone else, there's a good chance it could happen this week, because the opt-in deadline for those guys is June 29th. It has to be before the start of free agency because, well, when the new league year kicks off at July 1st, midnight on the East Coast, again, June 30th, Saturday night at 11 p.m. here in Houston, well, you have to know whether those guys are actually free agents or not. So not only do we have the firestorm of meetings and everything next weekend to look forward to, I think this week we're going to have a lot of rumors, because those guys have to determine whether they're going to free agency in the first place. And if Houston's an option for either of those guys, then I think clearly they need to make that happen this week. So either way, I think we'll have some news very soon. And aside from potential free agency and trade targets, there's also the matter of, oh, James Harden's going to get his MVP award tomorrow night. The NBA Awards on TNT starts at 8 p.m. Houston time Monday night. And if you want an indication on how Chris Paul's thinking, by the way, Chris Paul is expected to be amongst the Rockets traveling party to kind of celebrate Harden's win in Los Angeles. Of course, they did want more hardware than just the MVP this month. Of course, they wanted the championship trophy, and I don't think that the Rockets are going to settle until they get to that. Nonetheless, having James Harden recognized as MVP and standing up in front of his peers less than a week before free agency, honored as the league's best player, that has a lot of value. So I'm excited to watch that tomorrow night as well. And if you're a Rockets fan, I think you should be as well. Despite how it ended, it was a phenomenal year for the Rockets led by James Harden. And after so many near misses, I am thrilled to see him finally getting his due tomorrow night. So if you stick with us here at Locked On Rockets, we'll have coverage in the days ahead on all of those items. For now, though, I'm going to enjoy the rest of my weekend. Hopefully you guys can as well. If you want more content from me in the interim, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I am on there at Ben Dubose. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Also, don't forget our website, LockedOnRockets.com, our Facebook account at Facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, and our email account at LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. Those are all ways that you can access our content, ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the Rockets fan, you, the human being. I would absolutely love to hear from you. So again, email, Facebook, Twitter, website, always. If there's anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the diehard Rockets fan, please don't hesitate to reach out and let me know. Also, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, so many places where you can subscribe to us. We expect a lot of breaking news in the next couple of weeks. And if you want to be alerted right when our episodes come out, then subscribing to us is the best way to get those alerts. And if you would be kind enough to leave us a 5-star review, that's also how we can make the business model work, because that makes us look attractive to potential advertisers and have the business model work out for us as the most regular podcast covering the Houston Rockets. So one final time, thanks for draft expert Patrick Oxford for joining us, again, at HoopsMetrox on Twitter. Thanks to you for listening, and stay tuned, because very soon we'll be talking more Rockets right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast discussion of Houston Rockets basketball.